My name is Lisa Baker, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of this congregation. I'd like to welcome you all. It's a small group of us today who are not off at the fellowship retreat at Frost Valley, but we're very happy to have you with us, especially visitors. This congregation welcomes all, regardless of race, age, ethnicity, and sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can separate people in the larger culture. If this is your first time visiting us, please join us after the service for bagels and coffee and conversation. Please feel free to take any brochures on Unitarian Universalism that are on the wall near the outside door as you enter. And please sign our guest book out in the entry hall. Please feel free to talk to any of us who have name tags, especially those with us who have blue dots, which indicates that we're members of the congregation. We'd be happy to answer questions about the fellowship. Our services are differ greatly from week to week, especially during this period of time when we're lay-led. So we encourage you to come back two or three times and get a sense for the variety of the services that we offer. Now is the time to turn off cell phones. Parents of small children are reminded that we have childcare and we have religious education classes. If you choose to keep your children with you in the worship room, we ask that you please respect our need for this to be a time of quiet and peaceful reflection. We have one announcement from some of the members of the coming of age group, Christine and Kurtimon and Adam.
Hi, I'm Kurtimon, this is Adam, and this is Christine. And today we did the breakfast run, and we went into the city, and we figured out that we needed certain things. Next week.
Okay. Some things we found we needed were like pants, sneakers, underwear, socks, hats, and especially bags. A lot of people needed bags. And a lot of people needed men's large, so if you have any like old stuff that's men's large, they would really appreciate it because a lot of people needed that size.
And shorts.
Yeah, so basically, if you could just bring in some donations of large adult male or female clothes, it'd be greatly appreciated, like sweatshirts and sweatpants and any sort of like pants or sneakers or underwear or anything like that. Thank you.
We're doing the next breakfast run this coming Sunday, May 1st. So we just have a week to collect clothing items. So we had a lot of items. We all used most of them up today. So if you have any clothing that you could bring us during the week, that'd be a big help. Thank you. Yes.
If we bring clothing during the week, where do we leave it?
You could bring them here to the fellowship, and Handy and Mira have keys. I don't know if maybe you have a key. Just you can leave it by the coat racks.
Leave it by the coat racks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, welcome to everyone. We look forward to getting to know you more after the service. Our service will now begin.
Good morning. My name is Ed Teeberger. I'm a member of the worship committee and the worship assistant for today. We're going to start off the service with our prelude, which actually merits a few words of explanation. The piece we'll be hearing is by Charles Ives. It's titled The Unanswered Question. It's a challenging piece to listen to, but it can be very rewarding. I've included in the order of service an insert that describes the piece, and in particular the last paragraph on the insert describes the plot, the story that Charles Ives had in mind when he wrote this piece. It'll help if you read through that and kind of understand what Charles Ives is trying to depict. In order to appreciate the music. I should also warn you that it's a very soft piece of music, so you might have to strain your ears a bit to be able to hear all the details. Today, Henderson Cole will be delivering the sermon and the introduction. Just a few words of introduction for him. Henderson became a member of this fellowship while working as a research scientist for IBM during a time before this building was built and when we were meeting in the school across the street. Since there was a big letter P on his World War II Army dog tag, he admits to a Protestant upbringing in the Bible Belt South. He has not been here continuously since IBM sent him off to assignments at the Cornell Supercomputer Center and the Oil Industry Research Center in Venezuela. Since he retired, he has taught AP Physics at a Connecticut regional high school, but now he has retired again to this fellowship. Welcome.
Thank you, Ed. I won't repeat the greetings from the member of the board, but I would like to do a reading entitled On Hearing a Song. That morning, the choir sang a song which began, "I Can't Count the Stars." I drifted off into the vastness of the universe. There's no way, there's too many stars to count. Astronomers count only a few to see if the universe will collapse, a fate we would like to avoid. Then again, there are even more atoms to count. I can't count the atoms in even one star. Scientists count them roughly, since Avogadro taught them how. Things keep changing, though we know now. Even so, there are so many biggest things, and even more littlest things. I can, however, count all of us. With all the big and even more little, why so few of us? Perhaps we are not significant. But if we extinguish ourselves, this unexpected, aware collection, no such song will be heard again.
Kierdeman Weiss from the Coming of Age group will do the chalice lighting this morning.
May the light of this flame
illuminate our lives, and strive us to spirit, may it heal us understanding, and strengthen love.
Love is the doctrine of fellowship.
The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth and love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony, let us be loving to one another.
Let's take just a few moments for the fellowship greeting, after which we'll sing hymn number 128.
Thank you.
not time for our children to go to their religious education classes. Please join me in singing the children out. Our tradition to come forward and share our burdens and give voice to our concerns, our hopes, and our dreams. Please come up and light a candle so we can join in your joys and sorrows.
I'm lighting this for my father's older brother, my Uncle Glenn, who is very active, walks miles a day, golfs, and unfortunately was just diagnosed with ALS, with Lou Gehrig's disease. So that's kind of a horror show. And, you know, I hope that the progression is slow and that, you know, that something else takes him, actually.
Good morning, I'm Vicki Luckauer, and I want to light a candle of joy for our coming of age group, for all the great stuff they're doing. I haven't been here since we went to Boston, which was a blast. And for this morning's activity, feeding the homeless at Penn Station, and for all the great things that these kids have done this year, it's been a wonderful experience.
Hi, we're Diane and Todd Diston, and this is for, well, it's actually a candle of joy and sorrow. It's for our daughter, Ashley, and her boyfriend, Bill, and their new baby, who was born this Tuesday morning at 6:45, and their new adoptive family, Jen and Tom, who have them now as of Thursday, and we're very grateful to all of you here in the fellowship who've offered your support and your good thoughts and wishes. And we hope for a good, you know, moving forward of all of this, keeping in touch with the family and Ashley able to kind of move on to her future now at this point. Thanks.
I'd like to light a candle of hope for my grandfather, who's not doing very well right now. He's very ill, and he's kind of in the last of his time, so.
Hi, we're Jack and Carol Topchick. I'd like to light a candle of that burns with lots and lots of hope for a very successful auction this coming Saturday night. We need all of you to be there. I hope both old members and new who have never been before will join us at 6 o'clock for dinner. The auction starts promptly at 7, and there's lots of great stuff. There's some forms passing around if you want to take a peek at some of the items that are up for auctioning. By the way, we do not accept Visa, MasterCharge, or American Express. So please bring your wallets and checkbooks.
What'd you bring me up here for? One more thing. We're more than happy to take anything else you have through the early part of the week. This list is not in stone, and we would love to have anybody else who wants to offer whatever you have to offer.
my name's Lynn Griffo. I haven't been up here in a really long time, but I have a candle of joy. I have been hired as a landscape designer, which is what I went to school for 3 years to study. And I'm working for John Jay Land Management, so I want to light a candle for Jay Archer, who's been brave enough to take me on, and his wife, and wish me luck. I'm going to need it.
I light this final candle for all the joys and sorrows that remain unspoken, but nonetheless are still in our hearts. Now Henderson will do a reading.
My grandfather founded the Christian Science Church in Wilmington, North Carolina, and they had adopted the motto, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I would like to follow that with a quote from Reverend Martin Luther King. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty we are free at last. Free from false beliefs. And from Proust, quoted in The Yo-Yo World, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeing new landscapes, but in seeing with new eyes. You've all heard this before, but I enjoy it. A dollar bill and a $20 bill met again after a period of being separated. And the dollar bill said to the 20, how's it been? And the 20 said, oh my, Las Vegas, jewelry shops in Manhattan, cruises in the Aegean, contributing to the Republican treasure chest. And the 20 said to the single, so how's it been with you? And he said, oh, you know how it is, one church after another, church after church after church. So please get out your 20s and make it a different story. We'll now take up the offering. Thank you. have a few moments of silent meditation, but may I be so bold as perhaps to suggest a subject? Perhaps you could meditate on what are your deep beliefs which control your behavior. I want to thank the worship committee for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. I hope that my being on the worship committee had nothing to do with it. But I have some good news and bad news for the fellowship. The good news is that we encompass a very wide range of beliefs. The bad news is that we encompass a very wide range of beliefs. So I'd like to sermonize this morning, although I'm not an inspirational speaker. I know that Tom says our sermon should be inspirational, and I agree, that's what I come for. But I'm not sure I can do it, Tom. But I would like to take a look at our beliefs. And I think perhaps we can actually come together on a fundamental belief that we can all start out on and build our own individual personal beliefs on that, and that therefore there would be a common base on which we can depend. I see that Pat is in the audience, and from this podium several times, and I'm sure other people have too, they said, I can very easily say all the things that we are not, but I have a hard time saying what we are. I hope, Pat, I can offer you some suggestions on that. We do have, of course, our affirmation, which says what we are about as a congregation. And we have the seven principles mounted on the wall above the fireplace, which says what the UU is all about. But neither one of them really satisfies the question, what's in your religion? We emphasize the search, but what if we find something? Are there no milestones on our unending path? Or are we afraid that milestones may turn into millstones, as they did for the religions that we have left behind? We say in our affirmation that the quest for truth is our sacrament. What do we mean by that? Are we a truth-based religion or a belief-based religion? Or are they the same things? What would we do if we did discover a truth? What if it seemed to conflict with the beliefs of our friends and neighbors? So I don't think really we can, as my mother used to say, don't ever talk about religion or politics in polite company because it will only lead to trouble. And I agree. So I'm not going to really talk about beliefs in the sense of do you believe that the Bible is the Word of God? Does God exist? Is there a power greater than ourselves? Are Jewish traditions directly from God? The Muslims get their practices from God revealing them, and so on. But I think we can talk about the source of our beliefs. And I mean, of course, the deep beliefs that we actually use to direct our lives. And I hope that as we go through this exploration, that we'll end up with a UU creation story that we can all agree on, which would then be a foundation on which we can talk about what we believe. Let me say a little bit about what I discovered when I began my search for trying to find out what my own beliefs were a few years ago, and then my search for where did they come from? What was their source? As Ed said, I was born and raised in the South in the Bible Belt, in which religion is a way of life, at least on the surface. As a child, I suffered from asthma very badly. I had a hard time sleeping at nights and usually sat on the side of my bed gasping for breath. Found out I could even sleep that way. I had an aunt who would come some evenings and sit with me on the side of the bed and pray. Now, this aunt was a first reader in the Christian Science Church. If you've never been to a Christian Science service, you should really go. There's a church up in Katona. It's a very sparse and spare service, like the Quakers. They have a second reader who, during the service, reads a passage from the Bible. And then the first reader reads a passage from Murray Baker Eddy's Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture. Now you can see which book they consider the more important. But the Christian Scientists believe a great deal in the power of prayer to heal. You may be aware of the fact that sometimes they actually refuse medical treatment, relying on prayer. So this aunt would come and sit with me and pray silently for me. And I would sit quietly. But I never got any better. And in the way of children, I came to the belief that prayer has no effect. My aunt also rubbed my back and talked to me about things that happened during the day. And that did me a lot of good. I knew she was concerned about me and was doing her best to help. And her touch and her concern was of a special comfort. Another personal story. My mother was a Baptist, what they called a hard-shell Baptist in the South, who always made sure that my sister and I attended some Protestant Sunday school. It didn't matter which church it was, whichever one was nearest. But she loved tent revival meetings. Again, if you have never been to a revival meeting, you should go. They are very powerful experiences. When we were older, she took my sister and I with her to a meeting. Now, you talk about our 20-minute sermons and our little homilies, but there you're talking about hours of singing and preaching, and I mean good old-fashioned preaching. And at the end, everything comes up to a fever pitch, and people are invited to come up and witness for Christ and be saved. My mother and my sister went up, as did many others. But I was glued to the bench. People around me urged me to go up. Be saved. The glue just got tighter. I couldn't move. I came away from that meeting realizing that I could never go up and witness for Christ. A deep belief. As most of you know, most of my professional life was spent as a scientist at IBM Research over in Yorktown Heights. I still think there's nothing more exciting than the periodic enlargement of the horizon of our knowledge about the universe that comes from scientific developments. This covers everything except, of course, human behavior, and especially human behavior in religions. I know that we talk about the battle between science and religion. There can be no true battle since science deals with measurement-based conclusions about how the physical world behaves. And religion mostly deals with belief-based behavior of human beings. There's no room for beliefs and measurements, nor any way to measure beliefs. But as I just said, I think it is possible to find the source of our beliefs, a deeper source than the couple that I mentioned in terms of my personal experiences. In one of the recent physics journals that I get, Alvin Saperstein wrote a column which he called Our Two Brains. He told a story of a student in astronomy, in his astronomy class, who after taking the course and getting an A, asked him if the Earth wasn't just 6,000 years old, as he had been taught in church. Saperstein called that living with two brains. But it made me finally face up to the fact that scientific facts have little effect on beliefs. On the other hand, the source of any set of beliefs is today, I think, easily accessible. This is the result of the remarkable discoveries that science has made on how our brains function. We must look inside ourselves for the source of our beliefs. I believe that most of us, being so focused on the external world, have overlooked the results of brain research, with respect to determining what is real and what is imagined. Let me talk for a moment about some of this science. A Nobel physicist, Francis Crick, which many of you know of, one of the co-discoverers of DNA and who died recently, made great advances in understanding how brains work, and his book, The Amazing Hypothesis, lays out in great detail how the visual system in our brain works. We all know that there's no projection screen in our brain. So just how does the brain reconstruct for us a sensation in our consciousness that we are seeing something? Seeing is an amazing physics problem. Crick himself was convinced that sensations that we have, that such sensations that we have what he called neural conjugates. That is, that there were specific sections in the brain where certain neural bundles produced all the sensations that we are aware of. One specific case is that of color, and I know I've mentioned this every time I have a chance to speak, but it is so amazing to me. My friends and even some physicists have trouble with the statement that the color is not in the object, the color is in the mind. Now, color is very real and extremely important to all of us. Yet it is not a property of the physical world. What is a property of the physical world is the reflected spectrum of light. But the spectrum of light is not a color. The brain takes in this spectrum and converts it into the sensation of color. The real world is probably gray, different shades of gray. And when the light comes into our brains, the brain gets very busy taking the spectrum of the reflected light and, like a child coloring a coloring book, quickly colors in all the colors. So the color is in the mind, not in the object. I mentioned this simply to point out to you how powerful our brains are and how often we are confused with what's going on in our brains with reality. Evolutionists show us that what really set our species apart were changes in the brain structure and not body structure. We became what we are not by tooth and fang, an armor plate, but by the structure of the brain being able to derive certain concepts. All animals have emotions and instincts. More complex animals have consciousness, reasoning, remembering, thinking, and various levels of intelligence. Intelligence is one of those things that's hard to define, but we know it when we see it. We may have a superior level of intelligence called symbolic, linked perhaps to the one thing that we do know that no other animal brain has, and that is what's called a language capability, the ability to reorganize information in a way to produce new information and to be able to express it in grammatically correct sounds or paintings or music. There's no doubt that this language capability takes us far beyond animal communication. It permits us really to accumulate, share, and store knowledge, which is what we call our culture or our civilization, far superior to that of any other species that we know of. And, of course, that's why education is so important in maintaining our way of life. This knowledge is not built in. It must be taught. And when it is distorted, it changes us because we are what's in our minds. Another brain sensation which we all have, whose reality is questionable in the same sense of color, but and which also dominates our belief systems, is a sensation of being aware of ourselves. This is technically called self-consciousness, or in a broader sense, believing that we have a spirit. Is there anyone here who doesn't believe they have a spirit? This is tremendously important. The self becomes the important thing. And security of this self is a dominant factor, was a dominant factor in our ancestors' behavior. Don't forget our remote ancestors of 30,000 years ago had the same brain, the same language skills that we have. They just don't know us, didn't know as much. And security of this self is also a dominant factor in our deep behavior. Death has meaning for us, as it does not for any other species, because we wonder and we hope, we yearn that the spirit, our spirit, lives on. Whether the self, our spirit, is imaginary or not, doesn't really matter because like color, it's very dominant to our lives. It has terrific consequences. As an aside, I think it's the thing which finally drove us as a species to use our latent intelligence and latent language skills. We're told, as a matter of fact, that just because we had intelligence and language skills, would we use them? Not necessarily. No more than just because there are males and females, would we have any reproduction if we didn't have the sexual stimulation of the hormonal release that sets off a pre-programmed behavior in our brains. So I think it's this spirit, this perception of having a spirit, is what finally, in a sense, drove us to become human. To use our intelligence and our language skills to basically to find out if we're secure, if we're safe. Now, does an active God exist who cares for us, who created all of this recently or long ago? Is there a power greater than ourselves? That's a matter for your individual faith. I think what is clear, however, is how that faith originated. The tipping point belief, it seems to me, is whether one believes in a life after death. For me, the self is just a brain sensation which drove us to become human. And when my brain ceases to function, my soul, my spirit, my personal consciousness vanishes. The important thing for me is, even though I'm accident, I know that I'm alive. And that is such a spectacular thing that I would like for it to continue to exist. I would like for our species to continue to survive and exist so that the future generations can have this experience of knowing that they're alive. That means that what is good is that which helps our species survive. And what is bad is anything that's destructive. It also means that we have to all work together to assure this survival. And we should keep inspiring ourselves to work together until we really exist in harmony with each other and the universe. Now, if one believes in life after death, or tilts at all in this direction, then one will come up with the question of, where do you exist after you die? You come up with the concept of heaven, the need for heaven, someplace to go, and of course somebody has to supervise it, so there must be supernatural powers. And there, if some judgment is involved, there may even be a hell, supervised, of course, by bad supernatural powers. Now, the collection of stories that lay all this out in rich detail, inspiring stories, in ritual and stupendous music, are the evolved religions, which, under the guidance of a power greater than ourselves, provides inspiration, security, and explanation. I think we can now write our own UU creation story. Let us present a version of the story. I'm going to present a version of the story which I hope you will all find acceptable, and a story which I hope you can use as a basis of saying to anybody who asks, what's in your religion? So here is a UU creation story. We accept the teachings of evolution as to our origin. We understand our evolved brain led to our becoming human. We recognize that we perceive a spirit within us, such we know that we are alive. We accept that this perception leads to a concern for an everlasting life of the spirit. This concern becomes a fundamental belief for many, underlying all other beliefs. For those who hold it, this belief gives strength to a power greater than themselves and to the spiritual inspiration they receive from acknowledging this power, with a final reward of heaven or hell. We acknowledge and celebrate this spiritual life. For those who hold that their spirit vanishes on death, there's a different source of joy. For these, life is so spectacular that future generations must exist to revel in it. Good is what leads to our survival as a unique species. Evil is any destructive act. This spiritual life lies in becoming ever more compassionate and caring. Both groups acknowledge that we are at our best when we love one another. Thank you.
We've set aside some time today in our service for sharing. If you have some comments about what you just heard, please raise your hand and I'll bring the microphone over to you.
Thank you, Henderson. That was an awesome story. You should publish that. Make it a children's book with lots of beautiful illustrations. There is a group within the UUA called the Commission on Appraisal, and every, I don't know, year, couple years, they are given a topic in which to study. And they issue a report. They spend a couple of years studying it, and they issue a report. And the report that's being issued, I sat in on one discussion the last time I went to General Assembly, and the topic they were studying were the diverse beliefs within Unitarian Universalism. And they are issuing their report on theology in June, which will be very interesting to see. And it will be available, I'm sure, at the UUA.org website. So that might be a good topic for further discussion. Thank you, Henderson. That was very interesting.
What is interesting to me is that one is concerned with theology. Thank you.
I'm Tom Levine. Thank you, Henderson. I may not agree with you, but listening to you is always a treat. Your addresses are compelling. It compels your attention, at least my attention. It seems to me, to consider a couple of your major premises, that what is good is not merely the propagation of the species. It's the advancement of the species under circumstances that we cherish. For example, in 1984, A Brave New World would not be my idea of something that was good, although it may propagate and continue the species. I think it's continuation of the species with certain things that we feel are meaningful. I hesitate to use the word truth, because I think the truth, as used in what we recite every day, every service, is misplaced. Truth, for many people, has the notion of what is provable by scientific means, and the opposite of that would be falsity. Therefore, if we are seeking truth, we're seeking truth, and other people have really arrived at what is false, because it's not truth. I think that the word should be meaning. We search for meaning in life. It's not truth or falsity. And I think that the use of the word truth creates a certain arrogance in us, in the same type of arrogance that other faiths, for example, the Christian rite, have arrogance as to what they believe. And we should try to avoid that. We should recognize that we are seeking meaning in our religious observances. And I think... I think it's important to realize this, because ever since I've been here, and it's been 20 years, we hear this over and over again about the notion of how we're seeking truth, truth, truth. It isn't truth. It's meaning. And I think that when you talk about the foundations of our beliefs, the foundations of our beliefs are a function of what we need, and that creates meaning. That's why we believe as we believe. It's a combination of our experiences, our minds, our needs, conscious and unconscious. It's a coming together of many, many things which influences what ultimately our beliefs are.
Thank you, Tom. I didn't mean by survival of the species that necessarily I meant the growth of the population. And if somebody found meaning in life and then pushed the button for the nuclear holocaust, I wouldn't find that having been a good act. So for me, what is good is what will make sure that there's some of us to be counted in the future.
Three short stories. At age 12 or 13, I was in the Methodist Epworth League, Sunday meeting, and from out of nowhere, the minister said, "Now we're going to pray for Merle's soul." I didn't know what to do. And I told that story to the COA group two or three years ago when they asked me to talk about the UU and why I became a UU. Secondly, my wife grew up in Amarillo, Texas. And that's, is it a red state or a blue state? Whatever. Okay. I happened to be in Dallas for a business meeting, and I called up my sister-in-law, who lived in Wichita Falls. And I said, "Lib, you know, I'm here. Would you like to see your brother-in-law?" "Sure, Kitch." I arrived there as we were putting my bag in the car. She says, "Kitch, you won't believe what we're all going to do in Wichita Falls, Texas on Friday night."
They said, what are we going to do? We're going to go to church. We went to church Friday night. We went to church Saturday. We went to church Sunday morning. Unfortunately, we had a luncheon date later in the day, so we didn't have to go Sunday afternoon. The point of it being that the person who spoke through all those times was a scientist expressing the belief in God and the Bible. Very confused. So I'm still searching here, and thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you, Bert.
We live by so many facts that we, you know, we can see or feel. And I wonder about sometimes in our comment here, so that all souls, we believe in souls as Unitarians. It's a value of judgment.
I want to thank Henderson and Tom for giving such a good introduction to a discussion group we're going to be having next month. I've been wondering for a long time what this truth is that we're supposed to come here to find. And if you look in the Unison Affirmation, it mentions it twice. And, you know, so I thought, well, maybe we should get together and talk about it, since that seems to be a way we can find truth. So anyway, there's going to be a discussion group on Monday nights here starting in the middle of next month to talk about the meaning of truth and what we're looking for if it really is truth.
In my experience, it's not the answers that count, it's the questions that are important. And so I think the key thing is it's the quest. It's not so much what the truth is or what meaning is. I think as long as we're on the quest, as long as we keep looking and asking, then in my feeling is we're on the right track.
Thanks, Anderson. The one issue that I struggle
with... Welcome back. How was Rome?
Sorry?
How was Rome?
Oh, interesting.
Did you find a place to...
But they didn't give a crap about my ideas.
Did you find a place to sleep?
Pope, that's for sure. But okay. Is the idea of superior, and that... And then I remember hearing Stephen Jay Gould, and it sort of really hit me years ago when he was talking about how we're taught to think, and I think religion, of and certainly Catholicism, but religion promotes this idea that human beings are at the apex of this pyramid, and that's the way evolution went, and so clearly we are the most superior, advanced. But really, that's not evolution. Evolution has gone in a million, you know, in thousands of different directions, and different animals come off of different branches, and you know, and so I think that what I have struggles with is that when I sometimes think superior, I want to think better. I mean, in an arrogant, egotistical way, and I don't. In some ways, I don't think that about that versus a dog versus any other animal. I mean, yes, clearly a bird is far superior to humans in flying. And someone may be superior to someone else in figuring out a physics problem. But the concept of superior, I always try to think about that in terms of different species and what that really means. So...
Yeah, well, I could take the word back and simply say we're in control of the planet and no other species is.
Well, we could certainly do more to influence. I agree with that.
Okay. One more.
Okay, my name is Alain. I'm relatively new here. Actually, this is probably my first meeting into a Unitarian Church. And I come from a very Christian background. And hearing you today was a very interesting speech. Something was very confusing to me relating to the truth that we've been talking about. My tendency, because of my upbringing, is to believe into some form of absolute truth. You seem to be saying that we're looking for truth, but at the same time, there are many ways that can be done. You seem to be somehow implicitly implying that you're looking for some form of relative truth. So I'm very confused. Exactly. If there is a relative truth, what is the point to be looking for that jointly? Isn't that some form of individual quest? If you're looking for absolute truth, it makes more sense to look it into some form of joint meeting. So maybe you can enlighten me a bit more about this point.
I'm not sure I understood all of your comments. Would you repeat a last question?
Okay, basically, I'm new to the Unitarian Church belief. So are you believing into some form of absolute truth versus relative truth?
I think what I meant by truth is that we take evolution to be true, and if we just follow that line of thought, then everything about us is something that our evolved brain permitted us to perceive, just as our evolved brain permitted us to have the language capability. And by the language capability, we mean that 2 and 3 year olds come up with perfectly good sentences and having never heard them. So they must have constructed themselves. And that's a built-in thing from the DNA. So I take those kind of things to be the truth. I can take it as the truth that you believe that there's life after death. In other words, I can take that as a belief that you have, and that I can celebrate with you all of the consequences of that belief, namely that there is a power greater than ourselves, and that there's rewards in heaven and punishment in hell, and all the other things that the rock bottom promise of all religions is everlasting life. I mean, if you just take a look at them. So I would, in a sense, say that your belief doesn't coincide with mine, so maybe neither one of them is, in a sense, the truth, but I can accept that the fact that if you have that belief, everything else follows. And if I do not have that belief, everything else follows for me. But that we come together, and that the important thing is the survival of our species. That the only evil is the destruction of our species. Whereas you may have, following your line of thought, other definitions of what is evil. But I think it will come down to that same thing. The anything that's destructive to our survival is evil.
You've just touched on a point that I think we need to remind each other of, that the Bible, and there are many obviously fine ideas presented through the Bible that we can all live with. However, they're a collection of stories that have been written and rewritten and rewritten and rewritten. And if any of you have ever done any editing of writing, things do get changed. So we could even question whether what we're, you know, those people who believe the Bible is the basis of our religious thinking, they refer to the Bible, and many of the comments there do have relevance today. But again, I remind you, these have been written and rewritten and rewritten.
Yes, but I can still accept that they do receive a great deal of inspiration out of those stories, and that's good.
Yes, I'm not arguing
anymore. Yeah. Perhaps I could make one final comment then. One of the first things that was given to me when we joined the fellowship was a cartoon, classic cartoon, of a Yu-Yu who had died and was on his way to heaven climbing up the rocky road. And he came to a fork in the road, and there was a sign that said, "To heaven," and another sign that said, "To a discussion about heaven." And you know which way the Yu-Yu went. We believe in the power of discussion to arrive at the truth.
Please stand for the chalice extinguishing and join me in saying the words. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again. Now, since we have a new benediction, it might not be very familiar to many of us. Carol will play the tune the first time around, and then we'll join in on the second go.